Go down it. Alrighty, thank you, Aaron. Appreciate it. Don't get the weather there in the clump. Wasn't sure what that was.
Sorry about that. I didn't check it. Going to
That's right. That's right. Nope.
You can tell us what it is. How's it feel out there?
Cold. It's kind of cold.
Yeah.
The sun keeps going in and out. But I still dove in the water anyway. Diving in again. Why did you say earlier today, Tom, please leave this lady alone?
Well, because Hannah is on a well-deserved vacation, and Jacob persists in tracking her down on her vacation to ask her a question to clarify where, for instance, the money comes from for the incentives to lure us into vaccinations. Mm-hmm. And this poor woman is so responsible, she points out, by the way, I'm on vacation, but I'll check into that for you, and then gives us a nice response.
Vacation, facemation, Tom.
Oh, no. Is she here now?
Yes.
Oh,
my vacation was over yesterday.
Yes,
today.
Tom.
Yes, it was over today. It's okay. But thanks for looking out for me. I appreciate
that's right.
that. Very
we need
much
you
so.
In for the long haul. We can't afford to have you burn out too early.
By the way, how long was that vacation? What, 4 days? What were you on?
It was, like 4 days. I don't know. Oh. It was a multi-day bachelorette party, so I don't know what happened anymore. I'm lucky I made it back. No, it was fine.
Multi-day. All right, let's get to the news. So, what was the bachelorette like? No,
she had a good time. She had a good time. Definitely.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the fact that Seattle City Council wants to do more to reduce affordable housing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
I'm sorry.
No,
what they want to do is they want to make it harder for landlords to collect rent.
Right. So there's a series of bills that they just they took up yesterday. And these are more renter protections. We've got one that prevents most evictions during the school year. So for students, that is for students who are affected with their parents, so you couldn't evict their parents. And then also for school employees as well. There would also have to be for most cases, you'd have to offer lease renewals for many renters. And then it would also prevent a lot of the post-pandemic evictions. So already, I believe that Seattle had passed something where even once the eviction moratoriums end, we were going to have, I believe it was for another 6 months, you were not going to be allowed. It would be like the eviction moratorium was still in effect. You wouldn't be able to do any of the things like evict people for anything. So you'd have to follow all those rules. This goes beyond that and prevents landlords from doing a lot of post-pandemic evictions. They also passed a resolution asking both the governor and the mayor to extend the moratoriums. So the eviction moratoriums right now are due to expire both at the state level and in the city of Seattle level at the end of this month, so June 30th. So the resolution is non-binding. Obviously, they're just asking. I will say this, though. I was at a press conference with Mayor Durkan, I think it was last week, and I asked if she was going to allow hers to expire, and she straight up said, I don't think it's a good idea. I haven't decided yet. She's going to talk to the governor, look into some numbers, but she felt like it was a bad idea. So
which
may have some support
to
there.
Extend it or not extend it?
It was a bad idea to let it expire. So is the what I had asked her. So
here's my here's my spidey sense kind of question. If the city responds to these requests to extend it till the end of the year, which is what they're asking for, again, not binding, it's just a request, isn't there a sense, well, heck, we got a good thing going for these renters. Why not extend it past? Because they say, we're in the middle of winter right now. Let's extend it. Keep extending. At some point, they're going to have to bite the bullet, no?
Well, so you could extend it, and then you would be in winter, and then the winter eviction ban would be in effect, right?
Which would be practically year-round.
Some who want that. Some on the council many in the city who do want that. And
want people to live for free in someone's house?
Housing is a human right, and
it's not a human right.
That's what they say, and that's so. There's
but
that effort. There's an effort for rent control and all of that is still out there. from Shama Sawant and both some of those in the state legislature as well. Yeah. So there is that underlying thing going on.
If you owned a building, Tom, let's say you owned a store and somebody, let's say you sold expensive whatever it is. Let's say you owned an Aquaquip and someone came in and stole a barbecue from you every month, a $1,000 barbecue from you every month. And the city council came along and said, it's legal for this person to come in and steal $1,000 from you every single month. How long would you stay in business, or how long would you want to be in business selling whatever you are while a person is legally allowed to steal from you every single month?
Well, yes. At some point, you'd say, to heck with it. I'm getting out. And if I'm, especially if I'm a mom and pop landlord, I am going to sell out to the corporate overlords that can maybe take a hit like that and it not really matter. And that's why I have no problem.
Oh, no. Let me just to clear that up. Corporate overlords, because corporations are bad, what they do is they jack up the rent, right? What they do is they jack up the rent so that they get a different type of person in there. They take the old broken down house, whatever, they either bulldoze it and then build up on it because the dirt is more expensive, more valuable than the actual structure itself. So now the rent goes from $1,800 to $4,000. So now we're renting to the techie guy rather than the other person that could afford it. So the overlord government court is in the business of making money, and they will make money. And those are the changes that will occur. Hannah, here's the interesting thing. If I'm a teacher and I'm making $75,000 or $80,000 living in the city of Seattle, why would I be evicted?
That's not a lot of money to live in Seattle. Just I'll let you know that right now. But you could be evicted if you were affected by the pandemic. You could be, it depends, you know, there could be a multitude of circumstances. Maybe you lost your job in the middle when.
No, but they're sort of carving out one particular occupation, which is teacher.
No, and it's for school employees, so it's not just teachers. It's for anyone who works at the school and also for students. So no school year evictions. I think they did this in San Francisco and in San Diego where they have these programs. But as was pointed out in some of the public comment yesterday, those two jurisdictions allowed for some kind of some outs for your small and pop landlords and some very specific circumstances, which I don't believe this does. And that was part of the pushback. So let me just show you here. So here's more than 100 people showed up to talk about, to speak on this yesterday. Here's what the pro side had to say.
Many thousands in our city are on the edge of survival. Capitalism routinely sacrifices the well-being of the many in order to protect the profits of the few. And the impact of this trauma is always hardest on people of color, the disabled, LGBTQ, and other marginalized individuals.
Supporting these transformative tenant protections is supporting those at greatest risk of eviction, women with children. We clearly know evictions are a leading cause of homelessness, yet somehow we as a community can't be willing to accept that the infinite traumas to children and families will be perpetrated if we are willing to pretend that the pandemic didn't happen and that old lease laws biased in favor of landlords are a more important precedent to uphold than setting a new one. We won't let thousands of children and families be destroyed because of factors outside their control. This shouldn't even be an option.
Without these protections, how is the city going to address the massive number of evictions that when the moratorium is ending? We know the majority of folks who are going to be evicted are going to end up homeless.
So a lot of that.
And okay, well, John, we're going to hit the other side, too. Hold
yes, the other side. Here comes the con sign. A lot of people came to speak against it.
CB120046 allow a tenant to not pay rent and also would make the eviction window so small it could be impossible to practically enforce, leaving small housing providers stuck with no income and effectively no property. Let's protect students and teachers better than any other city in the nation, but let's also provide a single lifeline for small housing providers.
Deep-pocketed investors with big legal teams are becoming the only ones who can meet the intense demand for Seattle housing, which just keeps getting more expensive and more exclusive. Council should do everything you can to help get federal and state funding to renters and housing providers who most need it, and focus on enabling as many local owner-operators as possible to offer safe, stable places for renters to live with reasonable protections for all parties. In trying to cancel rent and stop all evictions, the City Council is causing even wider problems. Your ongoing legislative tsunami has disproportionate impacts on small providers and is creating a more deeply inequitable and unaffordable city.
Yeah.
So a lot of that.
Obvious.
Well,
it's so obvious. First of all, First of all, there's $47 billion that the federal government has taken from taxpayers and out of the private market that has been sent to these to states in order to be able to allow the rents to be paid.
Rental
the system
assistance,
is so screwed up that they can't get the money to the people. First of all, what I don't understand is why are they making the tenant apply for and go ahead and get proof of in order to get the money? What do they care? They've lived rent-free for almost an entire year or 15 months. It's not their money. Why should they go ahead and try to get the $47 billion to give to the landlord? Why don't you let the landlords go get the money that is their money? That's the crazy thing about this.
Landlord and tenant assistance, the landlords have to apply and fill that out to get like 80%. Those are the county and some of the state programs that have been around for a while.
Right. But that aside, this idea that you're going to allow the person to basically live. If I was a teacher, here's how I'd work the system. I would not pay my rent. I'd stop paying rent in March. I go March, April, May, June. I would stop paying rent. So I'd live rent free for 3 months, and then they take another 3 months. They can't kick you out during the summer, or don't pay during the summer. And then when the school year starts, stop paying there and you can live rent free. Would people do that, Tom? Or do you think people are way too honest and wouldn't do that?
No, I think way too honest. More people are honest than not. But so here's my question for Hannah. Yeah. What percentage of renters do you know of aren't paying during the pandemic?
I'm glad you asked. And I don't know, there's anecdotally, and I had been speaking to some landlord groups a couple of weeks ago, and I asked that very question. And the numbers I get it's somewhere like, between 4 to 8% maybe are not paying.
Yeah.
Are not paying. I'm sorry. I think I misunderstood your question. Are not paying intentionally, not necessarily because they need to not pay. That was the number I had asked for. So it's a little bit higher number for those who are not. I think we're in double digits for sure.
Okay, but see, the people that are arguing vociferously on John's side of the issue, we make it sound like it's everybody. Like everybody who's doing that didn't pay rent for the last 15 months, where it's like 90% or 85% are paying rent normally. So these are some, not everybody.
Right, working the system. Yeah. There are people taking advantage, for sure. And the bottom line is, and I think I told you guys this before, there are landlords who can take this hit, who have been working, they've been renting here forever, and they've had long-term tenants. I can't remember if I had this on your show, but there was an older woman I had spoken to who was in her 70s. She has 6, 7, 8 properties, I think, across the state. She is selling every one of them as their tenants move out. Because the most are in Seattle, and they're taking their business out of state. And that's not the first time I've heard that. That is a growing issue, and it's going to have a very long-term impact on the state.
Here, I know you've been on vacation, Hannah, partying with the girls in Vegas.
Yeah.
So 89,475 households, this is Seattle and Bellevue, are behind in rent. That is 11% of those surveyed, according to mid-April. 11%. Those are those surveyed, 11% of the 89,000. Okay. So that's a little more than 8,000, 9,000 that are behind on the rent. But the other part of it is how many of them are receiving $3,000 or $4,000 from the federal government and staying home, sitting on the couch with their kids and not paying the landlord. If you believe that a house is a human right, that changes the entire dynamics of the economy. Then you say, well, then the landlord has no right to be paid. Only the tenant has a right. The landlord has no right because profits are not a human right, and money and mortgages and interest rates are also not human rights. So once you put it into a new sphere of human right, housing, everything goes out the window, right? Then it doesn't matter. Healthcare is a human right. Well, who pays for it? Who knows? But we just determined it to be a human right. So that's what they're doing. You have people, socialists, seeing it as a human right. Now it's outside the sphere of economics, and now anybody can live anywhere they want and not have to pay any rent.
Okay. Go ahead, Anna.
I would just say, again, there is that push for that. So that's what you have to understand when we're talking about Seattle and evictions and rent and all of that. It's not, it predates the pandemic. There's long been this push from Sawant and some others now on the council to make this kind of change. And again, all the way up to the state legislature. Every single session, we have more bills that lean that direction. And I think you'll definitely see rent control come up here soon again. And, you know, I don't know if it passes, but it depends on the makeup of the legislature at the time. But there's an appetite for that. And it's harder because the ridiculousness of the cost of rent in this state that has happened over the last 10 years, as not all incomes go up, is there's a lot going on to this conversation. But mom and pop landlords, they're the ones that get left behind every time.
Here's the one that we all agree. Go ahead, Tom, and I'll say something.
Okay, I have another percentage question. Ooh, Do you happen to know the percentage of what they, because they make this distinction, and you just did too, about the corporate landlords can afford, they have teams, and they can afford to take the hit and argue in court. What is the percentage of, say, mom-and-pop landlords, which I don't know would be how many units, I don't know what would be included in that, but let's say two properties or 10 units or something.
I think it's under 10 or something, yeah.
Okay, so mom and pop, how many, what percentage, like how many, if you've got 100% of the rentals, how much of them are owned by mom and pop operations versus corporate? Do we have any idea?
I am going to take my old friend Mike Lewis's advice and tell you I don't know, because I don't know that number.
Okay, good. Okay.
Here's one thing
that
I think
also would be helpful.
Here's one thing I think is a half. Here's the thing we all agree on. If there's more of something, then the price comes down. Agreed? If you have more housing and you have more competition, the price comes down. Now, do the changes in the city council when it comes to eviction, will this increase the number of people wanting to get into the market to provide housing or decrease that number? And then when it comes to rents, if you have rent control, will that make more people want to build houses and provide apartments or less? Ultimately, what you will see is the cost of housing in Seattle will continue to increase far beyond other places, one, that don't have rent control, and two, that don't have socialists believing that housing is a human right. The prices of houses will continue to escalate in the city of Seattle because of that mindset. We will not create more houses. We will create less homes. The price will continue to go up.
Yeah, listen, they tried to, Alex Peterson tried to get an amendment added to this yesterday that would have exempted units under, or landlords with under 5 units. That failed. So that tells you kind of the mindset of both him and Deborah Warr has opposed it, but it's still passed. And nobody ever, I never hear any talk on the council about the things that you just brought up.
No, they don't understand. So. It's supply and demand. It's the simplest thing. By the way, at the bachelorette party, were you wearing hats that said "same blank for the rest of my life"?
It's hilarious that you asked me that. I bought her a sash that said exactly that.
A sash? That's even better than a hat.
Thank you, Hannah. Oh boy! I was at the Brick the other night, and there was a guy there who had a bachelor party for him, Tom. And I thought, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to tape this and get this guy to talk about love and marriage, because he did not look like the type of guy that would have one romantic thing to say about anything, right?
Uh huh.
Okay, imagine that.
Okay.
This guy was the most romantic person I have ever. It was crazy, the words coming out of his mouth. And I said to him, you're kidding me, right? Just looking at me, you have got to, this is not real. And he goes, no, I'm 100%. This is exactly how I feel about this woman in my life. Who's changed. I was like, oh. And he's got a hat on that says, same blank for the rest of my life.
Okay, but now the thing
and
is,
it was a celebration. He was happy. The hat, there's no irony. There's no irony with the hat.
But, John, the great thing is, if he's at the Brick, you probably will be able to keep track of him.
Oh,
5 years from now, you'll play that tape and see how he feels 5 years later.
I'm going to send it to Jacob right now. Okay, here's Tracy Taylor. She refuses to give up this song. She's offered $100 a week, but Rachel Bell said no. Her love, her devotion to her uptown man. Hang on. I got to mention Muckleshoot Casino, biggest and best in Northwest, Muckleshoot Casino. Okay, now why don't you want to give up this song for $100 a week?
Because one man who I do not know messaged me on Twitter and said he likes it. This is for you, man on Twitter. Oh, and his little daughter. She likes it, and she sings along. Andy said he makes up different. She makes up different lyrics for it each time. We don't want to destroy the creative minds of children, do we?
For $100 a week more?
No, I'm dedicated to this stranger man from Twitter.
Maybe it's Billy Joel.
Maybe it is. Oh, I hope so.
Hey, what's happened new in the world of television? Is it old again?
You know what? What's new is old, and what's old is new again. So we're going to see a whole other new round of reboots on TV in the fall. So the Wall Street Journal reports that NBC is rebooting new versions of Night Court and Kate and Ally. That's an old school one. ABC is launching a new The Wonder Years, but this time it's going to be about a black family in Alabama in the 60s. Fox is rebooting the 70s show Fantasy Island, and then NBC is going all in on their Chicago franchise. Chicago Med, Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, and then all of these new Law and Order shows. So I've always wondered why they do this, and the same with movies, because in my opinion, the reboots, the new versions, never seem as good as the old versions. So why do it?
Everything that Hollywood does has a single reason, and that's money.
Surprise! That's Gregory Bernstein. He's written four movies, and he's an associate professor of film at Arizona State.
How do they protect themselves? What insurance do they have that if they spend a lot of money, something really good is going to happen at the box office? And the answer is, we make things that already have a built-in audience. We make movies that we already know the public likes. And so on the high end, the expensive end, you see only endless sequels and remakes in Marvel movies. And on the lower end, you see movies which have a built-in audience because they're based in real life fact in history.
And he says making movies and TV shows nowadays is a lot higher risk monetarily than it used to be.
If you go back to the 1930s and 40s, the studios were making six, seven, eight times the numbers of movies they make now, maybe 10 times as many. And the average film cost very little. And so if a film, you know, didn't do well, that would not break anybody's budget. It would not ruin their business. In the 1980s and 1990s in particular, costs associated with distributing movies escalated really fast to the point where now the distribution costs are going to basically roughly equal the cost of actually making the movie. If a movie now doesn't do well, that is a serious problem.
So he was saying this is why you see original program, really creative, gutsy, interesting stuff on the digital platforms like Hulu and Netflix and HBO Go. You see things like Handmaid's Tale because they don't have to pay for distribution. They can just click a button and put it straight online. So when you're talking about TV and network TV, they have to cater to advertisers. And so there's a guy I spoke with named Garth Teegee. He works with these big brands like Geico and Burger King, and they place the commercials in the right programming. And he says a lot of the big companies that they work with are super conservative and pretty puritanical.
With a lot of the shows on like an FX with Sons of Anarchy or Nip Tuck did well in terms of the ratings, but always had problems with content and advertisers participating in those programs, right? That is the other side of the equation that has to be taken into account.
So the Wall Street Journal article I read also talked about the fact that a lot of writers are bummed out about this because for a lot of writers, it's not fun to do these remakes. They want to write original scripts, and there's not as much room for them as there used to be.
That it? There are no more cuts?
That's it, folks.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So that's really good. I saw the same article and I found it fascinating, but I thought it was just that the networks had just sort of run out of creative juices and all the creativity had gone to the streaming services. But you pointed out that's an interesting distinction. The great thing about these streaming services, they're supported not necessarily by advertising, but by subscribers, whereas network TV has to be supported by advertisers, and advertisers are very, I don't know if conservative is the right word, but very hesitant to take anything, you know, do anything risky, that it makes more sense that you end up inadvertently being sort of conservative and safe. I guess that's probably the best way. That's why so little of network TV is compelling, because it's too safe.
Yes. So conservative is the right word, because, you know, yes, with our money, but also because a lot of them don't like the content. And he was saying, you know, there's these groups that they'll write letters or they'll try to boycott. So there's not as much of the, you know, kind of sex and violence and drugs. Like, you could never have Breaking Bad on regular TV because the advertisers wouldn't want to sponsor it.
Yeah, it look like they're encouraging drug use, even if it's a condemnatory presentation.
But you're right. I think it does make the industry look lazy and not very creative. But, you know, I guess I'm in a bubble, because I was saying, I don't ever go see these. And when I see the previews, they look so bad. But they keep making them because people do go see them, and they do make a lot of money off of them.
When you say go see them, you mean just sit at home and watch them on television?
No, talking about the movies, not the TV shows, but with the reboot movies, especially the Marvel movies and a lot of the action movies, that is where they make a lot of money.
Well, if you know it worked before, then you keep doing the same thing. You'll see a menu where they've got like 50 different types of hamburgers or hot dogs. They're just working off the various theme. They know you basically like the meat and the bun, so now we're going to add a bunch of different things in order to be able to get you to buy this instead of that.
Wait, you can't just bring this up without telling me there's a restaurant that has 50 different hot dogs. What is this? This better not be like a metaphor
it's
or just
called
a
hot
story.
Dog hot dog. No. Yeah. It's in the book. It's in the book Contagious, and it's a place that sells just hot dogs. But if you go into the phone booth, there's an old phone booth there, and you pick up the phone booth and you pick up the phone, you will then, the phone booth turns and you can go into a little teeny tiny speakeasy.
Ooh, I love that. And then their sign is an American flag, but instead of 50 stars, it's 50 little hot dogs. So cute. So
I mean, you're American. A regular entrepreneur.
Yeah. I don't know if that's true, but that's the other thing is true. There is a place.
John's now offended that you're telling stories out of school.
Yeah, I know. Now he's fact-checking.
No. I'm just saying.
That's John's department.
If somebody's listening to this show and not Dory's podcast, then they would know there is actually a place down in the village, and it has a secret door that leads to the secret speakeasy that has only 12 tables.
Is this the hamburger place?
It's the hot dog place.
No, because there really is a hamburger place like that in New York City. Yes. We'll get off and we'll talk truth after the show.
Let's enjoy remakes of the Happy Days. All right. Tracy Terra, look at traffic for us. Ooh, nice transition there. Good job there, Sean.
Thanks, John. Anything for the show?
Anything?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's see. Moving on. We'll get to you doing anything for the show later on. This guy is a professional comedian, and he also likes to hit golf balls, and he decided that he thought it would be kind of fun to be able to hit a golf ball, in every single state, Tom? That was his plan? That was his goal?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you videotape it, and then you put it up, and then people watch you. By the way, stupid goal, 50 states, 50 golf balls. What's so hard about that?
Huh? Well, he had to do it in 30 days, and he had to drive to, you know, all these states, or a lot of them. So that's the challenge. But I thought he's sort of in your mold. Get this. Who does this sound like, John? Hmm. He was freezing in Barnstable. I don't know how you pronounce it, Massachusetts, on Cape Cod, in the middle of a winter. And he decided, I'm going to start driving golf balls into Wequaquit Lake. One golf ball a day for 30 days. He did it. He hit into the lake. He videotaped himself and posted it. And on the 30th day, he decided to celebrate by jumping into the lake himself. Fully clothed, mind you, but just for the stunt of it. He got such reaction to that, he says, you know what? I'm going to try to find something that's just dumb enough to be watchable. And that's what he decided to do. This guy, in effect, is doing what you do naturally by setting yourself goals and going through with it and then posting the stuff.
But I'm not making people watch
me. They want to try to hit a golf ball in every state in America in the month of April.
How you doing?
Let's get it.
Now you can live here.
Doesn't work on radio either.
I don't like your stuff.
Well, I'm getting out of here.
All right. He went into Yellowstone. Okay. He hit a ball in Yellowstone, which you're not allowed to do. And then he posted it. And then somebody found that he's in trouble in Yellowstone. And is he also in trouble in Wyoming as well, Tom?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, authorities are kind of checking him out to see because basically he's one of these guys who's posting the evidence of his crime. If he indeed committed a crime, you're not allowed to deface or disturb the natural environment of Yellowstone. I can't imagine anyone else who might have a Yellowstone story. So they're investigating him. He could face up to 6 months in prison and $5,000 fine. Probably not, but he has paid a lawyer $2,500 to put him on retainer in case this case is made against him. Mm-hmm. Do you want to remind people about your...
No, I don't want to give anybody any ideas.
Okay, good. That's what he's afraid of. He doesn't want any followers to do what he did, just like you don't want any followers to try to cook something.
Somebody else already did it, remember that?
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Okay.
Anybody can jump in the water, and anybody can just need a car to drive around and hit all those states, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He tries to come up with clever ideas to do this or that. He did do one on skates as a hockey player. I mean, he tried to, he's good on skates, but he said it's really hard to swing a golf ball.
Why are you just loving all over Jake Adams, Tom? Is he related to you or something?
He reminds me of you, John.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes, it is. I
met a guy in Atlanta who made a promise in 2020 that he would write a song every single day for one whole year.
That sounds so like you. And did he do it?
He did it. He goes, and I called him up. I asked him about it. He goes, some are good, some are horrible, but he did it every single day.
And what are you doing?
Write a song for us.
And what are you doing every single day? Oh, you'll write a song for us. Yeah, that's perfect. I love that. Okay.
I don't. You don't want to know what I'm doing every single day. Tracy Taylor, traffic.